We're here with Dr. James Lea, current president of the Selkirk Conservation Alliance, and we'll be talking about the important work the Alliance is doing right now in our community, along with the subject of the School Endowment Fund, which was covered in an article recently written by Dr. Lea about this for the Selkirk Conservation Alliance newsletter. We'll be taking a deep look at the School Endowment Fund and the question, who benefits? Is it Idaho schools or is it the forest product industry of Idaho? Why don't we start, Dr. Lea, we'll call you Jim, with telling us, our listeners, a little bit about yourself, your tenure with Selkirk Conservation Alliance, and your interest in Priest Lake. So let's just start there.
Okay. Well, I've lived in Idaho since 1983. I reside in Coeur d'Alene and practice neurology there for 30-plus years. But I've owned a property at Priest Lake since 1987. I bought a cabin there on the west side in 1987 and have been going there quite frequently ever since. And especially since I'm retired, I'm there, seems like almost, not quite half time, but I'm there a lot. I've been involved with SCA, Selkirk Conservation Alliance, I think since 2017. Mostly we've been mostly involved with water quality and testing the lake quality, particularly, but more recently, stream water quality. For the last 5 years, and we're in pretty close conjunction with the tribe and with DEQ, where we have a really good good relationship with their surface water people. But over the course of time, being on the west side, we have a terrific view of the Selkirk Crest, which is all endowment land managed by Idaho Department of Lands. About 20 years ago, something really significant happened. Of course, the logging has always been a major operation of IDL. About 20 years ago, the logging became much more intense, and more particularly in the last 10 years. I started following this and looking at, of course, I see great openings they don't call them clear cuts, but they're seed tree cuts, but basically a clear cut with a few trees left over. But they certainly show up dramatically as soon as it snows. I 5 years ago, I think I started looking at Google Earth images, and it's quite striking what's happened over the course of time with these great spaces opening up. And at this point, started inquiring, is there anything we could do about this? Or is this an appropriate thing for IDL to be involved with? I got involved with this. And historically, Selkirk Conservation Alliance, or Selkirk Priest Based Alliance, was involved with forestry issues in the very beginning, particularly on Forest Service lands. But the SPBA, as it was known then, tried to tackle what they felt was just aggressive logging practice, even in the 90s. But they actually sued the land board. And in a Supreme Court decision, they were found to have did not have standing in the case. And in fact, as it happens, the Supreme Court seemed to indicate that the only entity that did have standing was the schools of Idaho, or the children of Idaho. So that's where it stands at the present time.
I just wanted to back up a moment to Selkirk Conservation Alliance, that you are the president of the board right now, and you've been involved. You said that basically they're looking at water quality in the streams coming down. And first of all, I want to say thank you to Selkirk Conservation Alliance. They are an underwriter here at KRFY, and we appreciate that. But also then just moving on to the work of this Conservation Alliance, why is it important to be monitoring the quality of the water in the streams coming down the watersheds?
Well, and also the lake. We've been doing water lake water quality even longer to carry on research that was done by DEQ beginning in the 90s. So we can have an ongoing record of any trends that might be happening. The Priest Lake is an oligotrophic lake, just like Pend Oreille, meaning that it has very few nutrients, and that's why it's so clear and crystal clear. And we want it to stay that way. It's an oligotrophic lake, and we don't want it to be sullied by nutrient contamination, such as with phosphorus and nitrogen. That's been our sort of our scientific arm over the course of the last several years. But also the SCA does other things, and Amy Anderson, our executive director, has a particular passion for outreach to schools in the area, including the tribal school, but not just the public, just not the regular public schools, but alternative schools like homeschools, and the alternative schools around. And so that's her passion, really. And I have to add it to her because she's the one that manages all that aspect of SCA's work.
Well, we want to dive into the school endowment fund a little bit more, but let's talk about the geography around the lake. So the east side of the lake is thousands and thousands of acres. It's almost all state land. So the watersheds coming in from that side of the lake are going through state lands.
That's right. I mean, I think there's some 80,000 acres of the endowment land. And it's really important, I think, for people to understand how this came to be. In 1785, the land ordinance was one of the very first acts of Congress. And with expansion to the west, the government felt that there was needed to be an orderly way of plotting out property and defining what constituted governmental areas. And so this is the basis of townships and sections. And so a township was meant to be 6 miles by 6 miles, 36 square miles, and a section was 1 square mile. And they were all
1 mile.
1 mile, that's right. And they were all numbered. And so Jefferson felt that public schools should be supported. And so the proceeds of Section 16 were to go to public schools. And this was all, of course, keep in mind, this was all good farmland, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois.
Pre-settlement here.
That's right. And it's all pretty flat for the most part, and good farmland. And so this was a workable solution. But, of course, at that time, the population was fairly thin, and educationally went from grade 1 to grade 8, and then you were done for the most part. But it was a workable solution for a while. And those endowment funds still exist. What happened back in the East is that ultimately they were sold because the farmland became very valuable. But each state has endowment funds that were started by that old ordinance. As westward expansion occurred, the western states are very different than the eastern, and so we have in Idaho, we have sections that are not very productive. On the lava fields around Arco, you've got a few jackrabbits and rattlesnakes, but that's about it. So the western states were allowed to consolidate their Section 16s, and so they got the equivalent of that area in areas that they chose, and that was basically in Idaho, that was forest property. And the most productive forest properties are right here, and essentially everything north of the Clearwater but more particularly in Bonner Boundary, Banawa and Kootenai counties, and the Priest Basin specifically. That's right, and that's where the greatest concentration is.
And then the west side of the lake, that's all Forest Service property on that side.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I want to swing back to that, because that interesting geography gives rise to a couple questions. But so the school endowment lands are managed in under a mandate to maximize revenue.
That's right. It's a constitutional mandate to operate the... To drive the maximum amount of profit from the endowment lands in the endowment funds. There's also an endowment fund, too, and that's been very successful. And it's managed by wealth managers, and it's diversified. And they've done, I've looked at it for the last 20, 30 years. Now, keep in mind this with ChatGPT, so take it with a grain of salt, but the state endowment fund has tracked the S&P 500 at around 9% for the last 20, 30 years, which is pretty good. But then a lot of the efforts of the IDL are really specifically related to management of the lands, and the primary economic activity is logging and selling logging contracts, but also they manage leases, and they of course there were cottage lease lands at Payette and also at Priest Lake, and then the people that had lived on those allotments for decades. One of the opportunity to buy it,
and
generations up to 100 years, yeah. And so they had that opportunity, and from their perspective, they bought the property twice. But in any event, there were about $50 million generated from that, and rather than going to the into
this is a sale of a whole bunch of lots. On the east shore of Priest Lake.
And it also Payette Lake in McCall.
Well. Yeah, they're still selling them, actually.
Was that right? Yeah. There's very few left. I think maybe a dozen left at Priest. But anyway, instead of investing that money in the state endowment fund, which is managed professionally and has been very successful, they bought timberland in Bonner and Boundary County, with an expectation of earning 4% per year.
So they weren't growing the endowment fund with the sale of these cottage lakefront properties. And when you say IDL, that's the Idaho Department of Lands,
that's
manages
right.
the land part, and mm-hmm. the Idaho Land Board is the trustee of the endowment fund. But as you say, it's managed by professional financiers, but
the land board, they're the fiduciaries. It is their responsibility to direct the monies in a fashion that maximizes profits the school system.
So the endowment fund as an investment was making around 9%, but then when they got this $50 million, they bought land up north, and was that approved by the Idaho land board?
Well, that I assume so.
I
assume so.
So a lesser income, meaning 4%, they're saying.
Well, we don't know how much it will derive, because this is fairly new. But their expectation was it might be 4%, just from a investment standpoint. The land board put so much money into a narrow industry, one that's highly cyclical, the wood products industry, highly cyclical, and one that may be disrupted over the course of time. And I hope it is disrupted as engineered wood products become hopefully more available. And I mentioned that in this article I wrote that some of the engineered lumber is stronger as steel, is inflammable, and potentially would allow the southern yellow pine to be utilized in construction, which right now it isn't because it's too weak. So this is an enormous swath of territory from Arkansas through Georgia, and it's well suited.
Which are pine forests.
That's right, pine forests, yellow pine, and these are tree farms, and they're flat, and they're easily managed and easily harvested. If that wood can be utilized for construction, and Weyerhaeuser's looking at it, amongst other entities, it'll kill off a lot of
drive down the value of
yeah, because here we have to build roads into the mountains.
It's a very steep terrain, unlike right. those flatlands. They get these big feller buncher machines and
right.
drive along and cut the trees down. It's kind of amazing, actually, mm-hmm. those machines. We want to talk more about how the endowment fund is being impacted here, but how is the land being impacted by a mandate to maximize revenue in terms of the management of the land of the forest?
Well, I learned here 2 years ago, I think, that almost all of the timber companies are the owners of timberland are following an algorithm produced by FBRI, Forest Biometric Research Institute, which is an industry-sponsored nonprofit in Oregon. And they have developed the software that IDL has now adopted, and increasingly occurs across the West. Their approach is that in the future, the mills will be looking at harvesting trees of 8 to 10 inches in diameter, and they also feel that 45 years is an adequate time between harvest and regeneration and reharvest, and it's possible that works in the South. It probably does work in the South, in the yellow pine zone, and it may work in coastal Oregon. But we're in the northern Rocky ecosystem, and does it work here? Traditionally, in the Northwest, 80 years was the turnaround time, and this was adopted by everyone: Weyerhaeuser, Forest Service, everyone, 80 years. But suddenly, it's now 45 years, and with our cool climate,
cutting the trees when they're smaller.
Now, rolling down Highway 57, you see these large timbers. They're probably 15, 18 inches in diameter, some of them. But in time, after the forest has been worked over, they'll be harvesting boles, which is the trunk, mm-hmm. that is 8 to 10 inches.
And why is that not a good thing? I'm thinking it's not. The milling industry has to change their whole process, probably. But also, that kind of fast turnover, what does it create as far as, nitrogen and phosphorus in the streams?
Well, number one, it won't be a forest anymore.
Okay.
It'll be a tree farm. Mm-hmm. But but nutrients is a big consideration. I ask an academic, a professor of forestry who specializes in conifer nutrition, what concerns they might have, and she said she was concerned that it would reduce the nutrients in the soils, because the soils here are relatively young and relatively nutrient poor, and with increased harvest, there's going to be increased erosion, and we see this on the east and west sides, because we measure phosphorus in the streams, and it turns out phosphorus is a proxy, or can be a proxy, for soil, because phosphorus binds tightly to the soil. So the question is, will will in 45 years will the soil be as nutritious as it is now? And the chances are it's not. And there, but IDL doesn't factor that into their profit loss statement. So they make all this money, and then they spend, you know, they have expenditures of salary and health insurance and depreciation and maintenance. But you don't see a line item for loss of soil productivity, because they don't measure it and they're not thinking about it. But that's one of the things we'd like to do, is look at that specifically. And there are potential ways of measuring that. There's a small creek, Cougar Creek, on the east side. It's a watershed of 1,000 acres. And it has consistently had high phosphorus levels for the 5 years that we've measured it, which means that if you look at
that's primarily due to runoff from lands that have been logged.
And you look at that watershed, it's heavily, heavily logged and eroded. And there's we also see that on the west side, where historically Kalispell drainage was heavily logged, and it's now has a TMDL for phosphorus that EPA put there, because it's so loaded with silt. Even though they've closed roads, and the forest is growing, even now it's still losing soil. And if we lose the nutrients in the soil, then they're not going to grow anything other than weeds.
Well, are they implementing management practices that are avoiding clear cuts?
Well, yeah. Well, they have seed tree cuts.
Seed tree, yeah, or shelter wood.
Okay. I don't even see the shelter woods on the east side. It's the only ones I see are seed tree cuts, which is basically a clear cut with a few trees left to try to regenerate. But I don't know all the details either.
Do you see a difference in the management in that respect? How many timber sales they allow and the type of timber sales they allow between the lands on the west side managed by the Forest Service and the lands on the east side managed by the state?
Well, the east side is unencumbered by any environmental regulation. You know, there's no NEREPA, you know, and on the west side, things have been largely shut down years.
There's a higher threshold on Forest Service land.
Much higher. And also on the west side, especially around Priest Lake, they have to take in consideration grizzly habitat. And so that has historically closed a lot of the logging, certainly north of the Ranger District, Ranger Station.
Mm-hmm. Well, so talking about the endowment fund, the contributions this makes to the endowment fund again, what would the SCA position be on improving both the management of the land, but also the return to the endowment fund?
Well, let's talk about how much they're really making. So last fiscal year, 2024, IDL collected right around $100 million. $63 million went to Idaho schools, K-12, which sounds like a lot of money, and is a lot of money, but there are 310,000 students, and that equals $200 per student. In West Bonner County, and once again, this is from ChatGPT, but it takes about $13,500 to educate one child, $200 isn't very much. $10,500 is contributed by the state, so the schools have to make up additional money, and that's true everywhere in Idaho, of course. But here we are in the West Bonner County School District, which is where so much of this timber is coming from, and yet the schools get so little. And it's not like the school teachers are well paid. I looked at this. I think in school districts throughout Idaho, the West Bonner County school district pays their teachers they're in the bottom five in the entire state. So it's a school district that struggles, and they just recently passed their bond, but prior to that, it looked like they would have to close the Priest Lake Elementary School, which would have destroyed the community.
Right, and it's ironic where that the majority of the revenue is coming from the West Bonner County School District land, but in fact, they have such a shortfall, it's dicey for them to know what to do and how to continue.
Yeah, well, I suppose what I'd like to see is that, it's too bad, it's too late they bought that timberland, but if that $50 million, in my estimation, should have gone into the endowment fund where it could have been managed more appropriately.
Was there any pushback on that? I mean, is this group, the Idaho Land Board, who is fiscally responsible for that, they made that decision. Was there any pushback on that?
Well, not that I know of. Okay. And this is, brings me to the conclusion that the land board is supporting the forest products industry, rather than the schools particularly. $200 a child is really a rather pathetic, and we can certainly should be able to do a little better than that, I would think.
Well, people are listening and they want to dig in more on this issue, but also consider what they might do to try to influence the way these lands are managed. What would you say to them?
Well, I think we have to get some attention. So we need some publication or some advertisement in Southern Idaho, because I can't believe what's going on at Priest Lake would be tolerated if it were 100 miles from Boise. But people there have no idea, and we need to reach out to the people in the South, in Boise particularly, so they understand what's going on, statewide. Unfortunately, Idaho is so big, and functionally it's two states, North and South. So if you're in South Idaho, you don't think much about North Idaho, and vice versa. But we are all one state, and it's all one endowment, and it's for the whole state. That's the one. What we can do here, I guess, is to try to understand that. Whenever the IDL says that we have to do this because we're constitutionally mandated, we'll understand that yes, they're constitutionally mandated, but they're not necessarily mandated to log this aggressively to potentially threaten the future of the forest 40 years long term. Right, exactly.
Soils are being depleted, and say nothing of the pollution that's thrown off.
I don't know. There's not a lot of pollution. I don't know that there's a lot of that.
Not pollution, but you indicated there's higher levels of
phosphorus. But the phosphorus is bound, and it's not plant available, so I'm not too worried about that. But there are silt associated with it, and so on. So it's the phosphorus is really is just an indicator of a loss of soil productivity. The phosphorus, the bound phosphorus, can't be utilized by plants, but the way it's utilized in the forest is that the soil fungi mine the phosphorus and give it to the tree, and the tree gives glucose back. It's really a slick symbiotic relationship that's been going on for several hundred million years.
When you're talking about getting the word out, I thought of the word advocacy group. Selkirk Conservation Alliance. What about Idaho Conservation ICL League?
The Conservation League, yeah.
Joining together to kind of have a campaign about this so that the people managing the Idaho Land Board is a little more accountable. In your article, you also mentioned that not only did they give so much money to public schools, Idaho State University, University of Idaho, and the Lewis and Clark, but also they gave away to the State Hospital South, the Capital Commission, Veteran Home, and to Juvenile Correction. I'm just wondering, that kind of hit me as, Is that their job? Is that where that was supposed to go? Well, and who's managing their decision-making?
Well, yeah, probably the executive director of IDL, and the land board probably just rubber stamps it. I guess that's how it works.
Oh, I'd hope.
But with regard to ICL, I approached them a couple of years ago to, you know, about the issues with the IDL and the aggressive logging and so on. And they just didn't feel like that they could touch it.
Yeah. They probably have enough on their plate too. But this is an important, what you've brought forth in this article, the importance and the need for this endowment fund for education, but ? Is it really going for education?
Right.
Minimally, but who is it really benefiting? It's something to think about.
I think so. And so we want to bring it to light. And actually, I'm just trying to think about how we can advertise this in southern Idaho, where it can get some traction there, because that's where it'll do more good, I think.
Come up with a list of speaking groups or groups to go speak to. Amy's and you could go down there and do it.
Barnstorm.
Yeah.
So the land board is actually made up of the top elected state officials.
Okay.
The governor, is it the lieutenant governor?
Yeah. Well, it's the top five officials.
So
they made that decision to off some of this money to both land purchase and these other groups.
Ultimately, it was their decision, yeah. And they're the fiduciaries.
Yeah.
And, of course, our legislature does have some purview here. At least they can influence things with that land board made up of separate elected officials. Has the SCA reached out to our legislative delegation up here?
I don't think so. This is just relatively new. And so we've had so much on our plate this fall that we haven't taken it the next step. And now that the hectic summer is concluded, though, well, it's going to be time to sort of start strategizing with our forestry committee. That's our.
Well, we've referenced your article a couple of times. I don't know if we told people where that's at. That's in the Sightlines, which is the newsletter of the Selkirk Conservation Alliance. And I believe it's available on your website, which is scawild.org. So people could read it there if they don't have the newsletter themselves. And is there anything else you'd like to, direct listeners to get up to speed on the issue?
No, I think it summarized relatively well. I think, maybe not perfectly, but I've read that article 100 times and keep correcting it. But
well, you wrote it, so as a writer will do, you go back and edit, right?
Yeah.
Well, having the article published somewhere, because I had no idea, and this was new information to me. I don't know why I didn't, but that there was this endowment from right after the revolution.
Yep.
And this whole process and thought process of establishing an endowment fund for education, and then what is actually going on here in our area. The article speaks well to that, and I think it could be stand on its own.
Well, we'll try to get it out in a little more in the public. I was thinking about perhaps sending it to the Idaho Capital Sun, because I think they are investigative reporters, and they're not hamstrung by advertising and so on and so forth. They get grants.
Yeah, they're a great resource for the whole state, actually. Would be a good place to raise the hue and cry. And again, the website, scawild.org. If you go to the library, it's not there yet, but the newsletter's just out. So you'll see Sightlines newsletters there, and you could probably see the current issue of Sightlines. It's got a lot of other good stories in it as well. But the title of your article is, Who Benefits from the School Endowment Fund? Is it Idaho Schools, or is it the Forest Products Industry of Idaho? And is there anything else you want to throw in there, Dr. Jim Lee?
No, thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming in. It's always good to get information that can inspire and inform our listeners. So thank you very much.
Great. You're welcome.